Straits brings legal and business insights at the intersection of the shipping and energy sectors. This podcast series offers trends, developments, challenges, and topics of interest from Reed Smith litigation, regulatory, and finance lawyers across our network of global offices. If you have any questions about the topics discussed on this podcast, please do contact our speakers.
Welcome back to Trading Straits. My name is Daniel Ahn. I am a white collar and government investigations partner in the LA and Orange County office of Reed Smith. Today, I'm joined by my wonderful partner in New York, Mark Binney, and we're here to talk to you about the FCPA and customs. But let me turn it over to Mark, and Mark can introduce himself.
Good afternoon or good morning to all of our listeners. I'm Mark Binney, as Daniel said. I am, like Daniel, a former federal prosecutor and a white-collar defense attorney for Reed Smith in our New York office. And at this point, we'll launch right into what we wanted to cover today, which is the FCPA and how it applies for our listeners here. So what is the FCPA? The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act is the chief law that the United States uses in its anti-corruption efforts. And it is a United States law passed in 1977 in response to bribery of foreign officials by U.S. companies. The FCPA contains two big buckets of laws. The first one, and the biggest part of it, are the anti-bribery provisions prohibiting the making of corrupt payments to foreign officials to obtain or retain business. The second bucket is accounting provisions. There are accounting provisions which require generally issuers of stocks, to make and keep accurate books and records and to maintain an adequate system of internal accounting controls. The provisions also prohibit individuals and businesses from knowingly falsifying books and records. Violations of the provisions of the FCPA can lead to either civil enforcement or criminal penalties when criminal enforcers bring action, sanctions, fines, disgorgement, and for individuals, imprisonment. So let's talk for a moment about who the enforcers are for the FCPA in the United States. You have two main enforcers, the Department of Justice, or DOJ, which has both criminal and civil enforcement authority over the FCPA, and then the Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC. And the SEC is responsible for civil enforcement for public companies and their officers, directors, employees, agents, or stockholders acting on the company's behalf. Both DOJ and the SEC each have, in their respective agencies, a specialized FCPA unit that investigates potential violations of the FCPA. And while you have these two different bodies that pursue these, you'll oftentimes see, if it's a publicly traded company, both DOJ and the SEC looking at an investigation at the same time in parallel. Let's talk a little bit more about the anti-bribery provisions themselves. The anti-bribery provisions prohibit corrupt payments to foreign government officials in order to obtain or retain business. So this applies to payments, offers, or promises made for the purpose of influencing any act or decision of a foreign official in his or her official capacity, inducing a foreign official to act in violation of their lawful duty, securing any improper advantage, or inducing a foreign official to use his or her influence to affect an act or decision of the government. So, in short, you can't pay bribes to either win business in the first place or to retain business or some significant business advantage. You may be asking, who's covered by the FCPA? Well, it's pretty broad. The FCPA applies to issuers, so companies that have a class of securities listed on a national securities exchange in the United States. So if you're a publicly traded company, you're subject to the FCPA. Domestic concerns are also subject to the FCPA, and that's any individual who is a citizen, national, or resident of the United States, or any company that's organized under the laws of the United States that has a principal place of business in the United States. The third bucket, territorial actors, foreign persons and entities or their agents that engage in any act in furtherance of a corrupt payment while in the territory of the United States. So here's an example. A foreign national, somebody who is from another country, is in the United States and attends a meeting in the United States that ultimately furthers a foreign bribery scheme. That person would be subject to FCPA jurisdiction, even though the person is a national of another country and was only in the United States for a short time. Who's the FCPA apply to, or who's a foreign official rather under the FCPA? Any foreign official, a foreign political party or official of a foreign political party, any candidate of foreign political office, any person while knowing that a portion of the payment will be offered, given, or promised to an individual in one of those categories. And oftentimes in the FCPA, particularly in the energy context, a lot of times there may be an actor who is working at a state-owned company, like a state-owned oil company, for example, who would be then a foreign official for the FCPA, even though someone, for example, from Brazil who worked for Petrobras. Well, Petrobras is a state-owned oil company. So even though they're not a congressman or something like that in Brazil, if that person worked for Petrobras, they got a bribe, and then the American company or American individual or territorial actor got some business advantage as a result, that would be a potential FCPA violation. And Daniel, I know that you are going to talk a little bit about customer diligence.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. So thank you for that immaculate table setting. And so I guess, what is the impetus for, you know, why are we talking about the FCPA now? You might be wondering. It's a well-worn law on the books for quite some time. So is there any particular reason that, you know, we're discussing it on this episode of Trading Straits? Well, the reason is because of, among other things, the supply chain issues that have emerged in the past few months, particularly when you have supply chain emergencies that create bottlenecks, you know, that can tee up the prospect of bribery and corruption in the customs process, right? Because I guess the thinking goes, bribery is one way to loosen up that bottleneck. And so desperate times, they say, call for desperate measures when you have goods that are caught in a bottleneck. And customs is sort of the bottleneck within the bottleneck. Then there might be a heightened risk that actors will engage in bribery. And so, in other words, current events have really made this, I think, a timely topic anew. And so that's why, you know, we think it makes good sense to kind of regroup and see where we are. So when it comes to customs, I think there are three types of cases that intersect with customs and the FCPA. And this is based on past cases. So customs is, you know, one of those areas where there's actually a pretty hefty set of precedents in the books that we can consult to get guidance prospectively. So what are those three types of cases? Number one, the first type of customs slash FCPA case that you want to be aware of is where you have payments to customs officers, and the purpose of those payments is either to avoid paying duties or to avoid regulatory requirements. In other words, you're giving money to a customs officer, and the purpose of you giving money to that person is to avoid paying duties or to avoid some regulatory requirement. And the enforcement actions that have been brought make clear that that's verboten. Okay, so that would be an improper business purpose, definitely a no-go under the FCPA. Second, hospitality. So that's another area where we see the intersection with customs and FCPA. Just a simple example, you know, you have a customs officer and you're giving that person gifts or treating him or her to, you know, entertainment So that's another risk area for companies. And the precedents make clear that there are some factors that the enforcers will typically look at to see whether that hospitality crosses the line or not into an illegal bribe. So, for example, what's the value of the gift or the hospitality, the entertainment? Is it enormous? Is it nominal? Second factor tends to be the frequency, right? I mean, so of course, you know, one huge gift can be a bribe, but let's say the gift is relatively nominal, but it's frequent. Enforcers might say in that instance, the frequency and sum of those gifts amount to an illicit bribe. And then the third type of, I guess, hospitality issue that we see is mischaracterization of the gift, right? You know, maybe you say that, oh, you know, we paid for airfare for these government officials to attend a legitimate conference. And that's what you write in the books. But in reality, they're off to Disneyland or something, right? There is no conference. And as Mark mentioned, that would violate a separate provision of the FCPA, the books and records provision. So those are the first two types of customs cases that we see. And then that brings me to the third and final category of customs and FCPA cases, and that is facilitation payments, the dreaded F word, right, in the FCPA context. So what is a facilitation payment? Very simply, it's a payment to a foreign official to expedite routine government action. A payment to a foreign official to expedite routine government action. So there are three points that I want to make about facilitation payments. There, a lot has been written about it. A lot has been said about it. But I think three things are worth repeating on this episode. Number one, it's a very narrow exception. So there's a Fifth Circuit case, United States versus K. And that Fifth Circuit case is one that a lot of folks look to for guidance on what qualifies as a facilitation payment. And according to that court, the term routine government action encompasses only two situations. And that is where you are obtaining documents, right? Paying some amount of money to obtain documents that qualify a person to do business. And then second, you're paying money to schedule an inspection. That's it. Nothing else qualifies as routine government action. So you can see that that's very narrow. And in the customs context, you might want to ask yourself, okay, so when you pay money to a customs officer, you're not necessarily scheduling an inspection, right? You're trying to get the goods through. Arguably, you could try to fit it within that bucket, but it might be seen as a stretch by enforcers. And then the only other category would be when you pay money to a customs officer, are you doing so to obtain documents that qualify you to do business? You know, that also seems like it might be deemed a stretch by enforcers. You're just trying to get the goods through. You're already qualified to do business. That's why the goods are in the queue. But maybe there is an argument that it fits. But you can see that it's sort of, you need to tread very carefully, and it's a pretty fraught area. So that's the first point under facilitation payments. It's very narrow. Second, even if you qualify under the definition of a facilitation payment, you have to recall the FCPA is a U.S. law, to be sure. It has an extraterritorial reach. But even if you're safe under that U.S. law, a facilitation payment could be illegal in other countries, right? So, for example, the U.K. Bribery Act doesn't have an analog to the facilitation payments exception. And so while you might be safe under U.S. law, you could be in danger if there is some argument that the UK Bribery Act applies. So you got to be mindful of these cross-border implications. The third point under facilitation payments is that even if the payment qualifies as a facilitation payment, qua facilitation payment, and even if there's no danger of the payment being illegal under some other jurisdiction's law, you could still run afoul of the FCPA if you don't characterize the facilitation payment correctly in your books and records, as Mark mentioned earlier. And there are cases where that has happened, where you should denote it as a facilitation payment, but you denote it as something else. And then the enforcer takes the position that you were concealing that, or that it was just improperly recorded. You can see yourself then in the crosshairs of an FCPA investigation. So what's the takeaway here? Well, I think in the customs context, you're walking through a potential minefield. And I think that's why, you know, Mark and I, in our experience, we see that a lot of companies straight out prohibit the payment of facilitation payments because they don't want to, traverse that minefield. That being said, there are some companies that allow facilitation payments, but they do so under the narrowest of circumstances and with, you know, chief compliance officer approval or, you know, legal's approval. So once again, it's an area that we wanted to highlight in light of current events. And I hope this little primer has been helpful. But then you might be wondering, well, that's all well and good, Daniel, but, you know, what can we do in terms of due diligence and, you know, from a compliance-oriented perspective to get ahead of this? And for that critical piece, I'll turn it back over to my friend Mark.
Thanks, Daniel. So one of the toughest things for any multinational company is doing the appropriate amount of diligence and also having compliance programs. And what the important thing is to be specific to the facts of your business and the facts of the jurisdiction that you are doing business in. So in terms of your due diligence, for a company that is doing business with a new counterparty, you really want to focus on doing an initial review of that new counterparty with some fact gathering. And if appropriate, making requests for information to fill out your understanding of that new potential partner. Doing real compliance analysis regarding the counterparty. What are they doing to make sure that they're complying with the FCPA and the corruption, the anti-corruption laws in their country? And of course, all of this has to be taking into account the risk profile. If you are in a country that's really high on the corruption indexes, then you want to be more careful in your due diligence as you consider a new counterparty or a company that you might acquire, however you're dealing with this other company or the country, just knowing the country itself. If you're going to be doing a lot of business through customs in a particular country, knowing the customs, or I should say the issues of corruption in the past, if there are issues for that country, being sensitive to those and how they've arisen. And you also need a tailored approach with respect to compliance. And in terms of compliance best practices, what we'd recommend is, frankly, going to the hallmarks of, as the Department of Justice has given them, of an effective compliance program, a commitment by senior management and a clear policy against corruption, codes of conduct and compliance policies prohibiting all forms of bribery, oversight and resources, risk assessments done regularly to identify the bribery risk in each business unit and effectiveness of controls, training and continuing advice, internal audit procedures, incentive and disciplinary measures where there are instances where there is a violation of the policy, and third-party due diligence. And third-party risk is very important. And I think also here, you know, particularly in customs and trade situations where oftentimes there's going to be third party contractors or intermediaries that are used by a company. And that's an area where, unfortunately, when it works well, it's great. But when there are problems, you often see that come up involving the intermediary. So, for example, if you are a company in the United States, now you're doing business in a new foreign jurisdiction, and you use a local agent there as a third party to assist you, as whether you're getting your goods through or whatever, in whatever way that they're helping you, or perhaps to get new business opportunities, help you find new business opportunities, because this third party agent is based in a country. They have a lot of knowledge, and there's all kinds of good things that they can do that may be legitimate. Absolutely. And companies use third parties all the time. But here you have to be very careful about making sure that they have the appropriate skill set to help you, that you've done some risk-based due diligence with regard to the third-party intermediary. And I'll just note that oftentimes when I was a federal prosecutor on the other side of the aisle prosecuting cases involving FCPA violations, this is where prosecutors and regulators often focus, because, again, unfortunately, this is the sort of the weak spot where there can be a bad guy, and the company has to have done its appropriate due diligence to prevent them from hiring someone who, for example, doesn't have the right skill set and only is, their only value is in bribing people. That's a worst nightmare for a company that's trying to act legitimately. So you just have to look at those carefully. And just some quick compliance nightmares to avoid. These are come from cases that are public, where when the Department of Justice or the SEC has resolution, there's a statement of facts that's attached to it that sets out what the company was found to have done. And these are some examples from cases I worked on that are now publicly available. And one company hired a third-party agent, no appropriate skills, who was paid a great deal and was a well-known lobbyist. But in that country, there was no lobbyist, was just meant bribe payer. There was no actual professional lobbyist. Bogus contracts for third-party intermediaries with essentially no requirements for the payments that were received by the third-party intermediaries. Due diligence for a proposed counterparty that indicated that they were a, quote, master of kickbacks. Those are the types of red flags that if you see them, that you want to run the other way. But with those thoughts in mind, I pass it over to Daniel to give some concluding thoughts about how to best meet the FCPA.
Wonderful suggestions. And I guess, you know, we can end where we began, right? Current events have once again made the FCPA and customs come to the fore. And, you know, this is, I think, a wonderful time, right, to reassess all of those things that Mark has identified for us to see whether things need to be enhanced, or maybe messaging needs to be reinforced, or training should be redone. You know, during these sort of emergency supply chain times, just to make sure everyone is on the same page and you're not running afoul of this law that we all know now as the FCPA. Well, we really hope you enjoyed this episode of Trading Straits. Thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you will join us for the next episode. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Trading Straits is a Reed Smith production. Our producer is Ali McArdle. For more information about Reed Smith's energy and natural resources or transportation practices, please email tradingstraits@reedsmith.com. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher, and reedsmith.com, and our social media accounts at reedsmithllp on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.
This podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship, nor is it intended to suggest or establish standards of care applicable to particular lawyers in any given situation. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome. Any views, opinions, or comments made by any external guest speaker are not to be attributed to Reed Smith LLP or its individual lawyers. All rights reserved.